This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Earlier this year, officials from Immigration and Customs Enforcement, also known as ICE, arrested 83 people in Wisconsin between Friday, September 21st and Monday, September 24th. The undocumented immigrants were removed from 14 counties across the state, including Tremplo, Eau Claire, Taylor, and Marathon counties in western Wisconsin. ICE says they were all amenable to arrest and removal under the U.S. Immigration and Nationality Act. 44 of those had previous criminal records. The surprise arrests sent shockwaves through this region's Latino communities and continue to impact agriculture and other businesses that rely on migrant workers from Mexico and Central America. The effect of immigration enforcement and policy on western Wisconsin is the topic of this week's Newsmakers, a conversation held earlier this week in our Wisconsin Public Radio Eau Claire studios and first broadcast on WPR's The West Side. WPR's Dean Kallenbeck is our moderator.
Joining us today for our conversation are Dave Gorak of Laval. He's been the executive director of the Midwest Coalition to Reduce Immigration since 2001. It's a nonprofit that was founded in 1995 with the stated goal to educate the public about the need to reduce immigration to sustainable levels. Dave Gorak, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And in the studio is Medea Segala of El Centro de Conexión de Chippewa Valley. The organization was created in June of 2010 to help meet the needs of the growing Latino population in the Chippewa Valley and north central Wisconsin. The group has increased to 120 volunteers since then. Medea Segala, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
So, to begin, immigration is a complex issue, and hopefully we'll get through many aspects of it during this hour. Before doing so, though, I'd like to spend the first few minutes getting the perspective of our guests just a bit. Dave Gorak, talk about the Midwest Coalition to Reduce Immigration and what your group is hoping to accomplish.
Well, as you pointed out, we are a nonprofit organization, and we have a pretty straightforward mission, and that is to educate the American people about the need to restore immigration levels to credible levels, if you will. We stand fully behind the recommendations of the Immigration Reform Commission that was created by President Clinton and chaired by the civil rights icon Barbara Jordan. And basically what she said is that any immigration policy that we decide to create, it must put the national interest first. And right now, it is a very dangerous and reckless policy that benefits only the few at the expense of the many. So, as a sovereign people with the right to self-determination, we have the right to determine who and how many people come into this country. And whatever immigration policy we end up with, again, it's got to benefit all of us and not just a select few.
That's Dave Gorak. Medea Segala, talk a little bit about your own story, but also your organization, El Centro de Conexión de Chippewa Valley.
So I personally have a completely different story and viewpoint than Dave does, because my parents came to this country undocumented 40 years ago, and thankfully now they're citizens and contributing members of their community. And so for me, I see it from a more humanistic approach. And in Centro de Conexión, we're really here to do three things. We are here to not only empower the Latino community by providing the resources that they need, but we're also here to educate the local community as to what the Latino community is and their contributions, and then bridge that gap so that we can be one resource together.
So, Medea Segala, the arrest for deportation of the 83 undocumented immigrants in Wisconsin earlier this fall made big news for all of us. What effect did those arrests have on the Latino community in this area?
Well, we were actually, so I also participate with JONA, which is joining our neighbors at Advancing Hope here in the Chippewa Valley, and we had the Mexican consulate in town on that day that we actually became fully aware that ICE was in the area, not only in Eau Claire, but the Arcadia Independence area. And to have a personal friend give you a call and say, hey, they knocked on my door, makes it even more relevant to you. On top of the fact that on the street that I live on, they were at the apartments right across. And so when you're getting calls and messages and people are wondering what's going on and how the impact is, and you see the fear that it actually creates and generates because of the method in which they decided to come into our communities, you can really see the impact that it actually has on not just your local residents, but like on the businesses as well that are impacted by that.
Our country has laws regarding documentation of immigrants. So in this case, more than half of those arrested had criminal records. Why should people who are in the country legally fear such enforcement actions?
So the problem with the way that ICE came into this into these areas is the fact that they have their own policies. They have their own procedures that they are guided by. And so if they are expecting anybody, any of us, to actually follow the policies and rules of the law, they have to, by themselves, make sure that they're following their own policies. And they're not supposed to come in using scare tactics. They've had a memo that was printed out for them telling them and indicating to them exactly how they are supposed to come. So they're not supposed to pretend like they're police officers. They're not supposed to be coming lying to people and being deceptive and manipulating them and doing all sorts of scare tactics. That's not like the kind of policing that we want our immigration policy to be, right? Like, we all want a safe country to live in, and we want safe borders. But we have to do it in a method in which is respectful to both our policies and the residents of the community. And for us, the problem that ends up happening is through Jonah, we've worked really, really a lot with the local police department and have formed a really great relationship with them. So when you have immigration coming to the door and knocking and saying that they're police and having vests that say police, and some don't even say that they're ICE or anything like that, you have the community believing that they are somebody that they're not. So you're misinforming them. And then what you're doing is, when we actually have the police department that needs people to be witnesses and testify, you're going to have that bridging gap, and you're going to have rumors like the one that I was asked is the Eau Claire Police Department now going to be just arresting people and deporting them just because they're Mexican? And so we have to be able to have some sort of accountability for the way that they're behaving themselves. I understand that people do have records, but this narrative of the fact that they're some sort of harm to the community is really just a false narrative. The Eau Claire Sheriff's Department actually does report them right away to immigration. And so for them to actually say that 10 years later they're now a harm to society just seems to be a false narrative that they're spreading.
Dave Gorak, the September raid and most of the focus of recent political discourse has focused on Latinos. Is this new emphasis on enforcement targeting Latinos, is it racist?
I don't know why people always insist on bringing the subject of race or bigotry or xenophobia or nativism and most recently white nationalism into this conversation when it has nothing to do with that. This is about the rule of law, and it's about a sovereign nation having the right to enforce those laws. Now, the comment was made a few seconds ago that, people are being arrested and deported just because they're Mexican. No, they're being deported because they're in this country illegally, and that is the only grounds that is necessary for deportation. All right? It's got nothing to do with a broken headlight or driving without a license. If you are in this country illegally, it is sufficient grounds for deportation. That's what sovereignty is all about. That's what self-determination is all about. And the American people don't have to apologize to anyone for expecting their laws that were created to protect the public and American jobs to be enforced.
Are you concerned about the ICE agents in this case going outside of their own guidelines as far as approaching the communities that they were dealing with?
Well, certain regulations have been laid out, well, then, yeah, they should be honoring those things. But again, the bottom line for us is that we can't keep backing up every time somebody complains about harassing people in this country illegally. When you enter this country illegally, or if you come here on a visa and deliberately overstay it, then you have to expect repercussions. You have broken the law. So it just seems to me that the federal government is falling all over itself to accommodate people who shouldn't be here in the first place. And the American people deserve better than that.
I just wanted to correct something that Dave said. I think he misunderstood what I said. I had said that I had received a call asking me if the police department was now going to be arresting Mexicans and deporting them. You're not saying that that's exclusively what they're doing. But I do want to address something that Dave also said. Here's the problem with our immigration process is that while we have these laws and we're expected to follow our laws, and nobody's saying that we shouldn't follow our laws, of course, that's what makes this nation great, right? That we have good laws and they're enforceable. But the problem with immigration is such, is that immigration will tell you, we don't want you here, right? But then, in the same respect, once you're fixing your papers or trying to get legalized here, they know that you're here undocumented, and they tell you to stay here undocumented, and they tell you to continue to work as you continue to work. So now you have to prove to them that you've been working this entire time, right? It doesn't matter under whose name you're working. That doesn't matter to them. What they want to know is that you've been paying your taxes. So you have a system that tells you, we want you to follow our laws to come into our country, but if you're in our country legally or undocumented, and then we're going to tell you it's okay for you to stay. And I personally know someone who had been told that, received that letter for immigration saying, we need you to stay here. Don't move. Don't stop doing what you're doing. And that person has been waiting 20 years. Mm. So immigration has, like, it's a contradiction to itself, saying, stay here, continue to do what we're asking you not to do, continue to break our laws, but in the meantime, we'll see if we can help you become here legal.
We're listening to a conversation about immigration and how the issues behind immigration affect us here in Western Wisconsin. Dave Gorak of the Midwest Coalition to Reduce Immigration and Medea Sagala of El Centro de Conexión de Chippewa Valley are our guests. Up next, producer Taylor Pomisil explored some aspects of the immigration situation here in Western Wisconsin and shares what she found in this report.
In September, U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement conducted a four-day operation in Wisconsin. They hit several Wisconsin counties, including Trumbull and Eau Claire, and arrested 83 people they called immigration violators and criminal illegal aliens. Dave Gorak is the executive director of the Midwest Coalition to Reduce Immigration. He says the arrests were justified. Gorak says the American immigration policy is immoral and reckless, forcing immigrants in the United States to compete with American workers.
It forces the most vulnerable people in our society, those people who have little education and few skills, are working poor, if you will, to compete with foreign workers who also have very few skills and little education. We're very pleased that ICE did what it did, and we want to see more of it.
Gerardo Licon is an assistant professor of Latin American Studies and board member of the El Centro de Conexión de Chippewa Valley, a local nonprofit started in 2010. He says it focuses on building relationships with the growing Latino population and the Chippewa Valley, especially police. That relationship helps them prepare for a situation like this. But Licon says ICE agents didn't alert local law enforcement prior to the September arrests.
We didn't know who was being picked up, where they were being kept. We didn't even know if this was really ICE or some people kidnapping the most vulnerable in our community.
John Rose now is a dairy farmer in Buffalo County. He hires immigrant workers to do everything from driving and fixing tractors to milking and delivering cows. He says without their help, he would go out of business.
I would no longer be able to milk cows. It would destroy my life.
Rose now requires documents proving citizenship before hiring workers. He says refusing genuine-looking documents could result in a hefty fine by the Federal Office of Special Counsel for Discrimination.
It's in my best interest to look at the documents, and if they appear real, to accept them.
In January, Rosnell will make his 10th trip to Mexico to visit the families and villages of where his workers come from. He says he needs to understand the culture and language to be a great employer. Roberto Texpile is one of 10 immigrant workers on Rosnell's farm. He's from Antisinca in the Mexican state of Veracruz and sends money home to his wife and three children every paycheck.
I work hard for them, and it's kind of hard to build a family, but we never keep up.
Tex Pile has been working for Rosenau for the past 4 years. His long work week includes everything from milking cows to working as an electrician. He's already spent 20 years in the U.S. working for his family and saving to open a business of his own, hopefully a bakery or a grocery store.
I don't know how long I stay, but one day I'm going home with the kids.
He says ICE could have put this all on hold.
Some people I know, they go for 2 months, for 6 months, stay in the jail and they go home. If they come, I don't know what we're going to do.
Back in Eau Claire, Professor Lee Collins says taking away the breadwinner of a family causes problems not only for the family, but taxpayers.
The expense of the raids, the expense of detention, the court expenses, but now basically social welfare trying to help these families too.
He says jobs like dairy farming are year-round, and these arrests have only hurt American families.
All the people taken away were not people on welfare. They were people working in local businesses, you know, providing their labor to the local economy.
On the farm, Rosenau says he'll continue to speak for his employees.
I think it's really, really important in all of this stuff is to understand these are real people. These are people that we all need to know. That isn't some statistic. For me to sit silent, I can't. I have to say something because they are really wonderful people.
The immigration issue pits law against business. According to the American Immigration Council, nearly 5% of Wisconsin residents are immigrants, and just under a quarter are working the farming or fishing industry. For Wisconsin Public Radio, I'm Taylor Pomisil.
I'm Dean Kallenbach. When we're talking about the impact of immigration policy and enforcement in this part of the state of Wisconsin, our guests are Medea Sagala of El Centro de Conexión de Chippewa Valley and Dave Gorak of the Midwest Coalition to Reduce Immigration. Dave Gorak, you were in that piece, and you have pushed for policies even stricter than those now in place that would reduce legal immigration into the United States. But many of us learned in school the inscription on the Statue of Liberty, give me your tired, you're poor.
By the way, Dean,
yes.
Dean, there is no inscription on the Statue of Liberty.
Well, it's mounted, the poem is mounted at the Statue of Liberty.
That's right, but the Statue of Liberty's official title is Liberty Enlightening the World, not Liberty Inviting the World. The statue has never had anything to do with immigration. The poem you are referring to is called The New Colossus.
That's right.
It was written in 1883, okay, and the statue was dedicated in 1886. The author, Emma Lazarus, died in 1887, and about 15 years later, a group of her friends...
Right.
Got together, put that poem on a small plaque, put it inside the pedestal. The federal government had no hand in it. But, again, the Statue of Liberty has nothing to do with immigration.
But isn't that concept of squelching immigration opposed to what this country stands for? The
no.
Dream of coming to the U.S. that most of us have immigrant ancestors who came here for a new life.
You know, we can jump into the environmental issue of this because the greatest threat to our environment is population growth. Now, do you know who said in this country, and I'm quoting here, in this country, it is phony to say I am for the environment, but against limiting immigration. The fact is we just can't take in everybody who wants to come here. Do you know who said that?
I don't.
Okay. Gaylord Nelson, founder of Verte.
So many immigrants who are working in Wisconsin are part of the dairy and agriculture industry, as we heard in Taylor's piece. The American Immigration Council says immigrants make up over 22% of all Wisconsin farmers, fishers, and foresters. Medea Sagala, are those the types of jobs Latino immigrants are holding around here for the most part?
Yes, they're definitely holding 90% of the laborers at the in the dairy farmers are undocumented immigrants or immigrants as well. And so they make a huge contribution to the dairy farm. Our dairy farms in Wisconsin would cease to exist if it wasn't for their labor. When there was a small pickup in the Elmina area, one of the owners of a local farm, Norsfus, indicated that the reason he hires the labor that he does is because he cannot get local people, natives, to actually apply for those jobs. And so how is a farmer supposed to exist if they cannot get the laborers? And also, you know, a Facebook post I saw, somebody indicated that they had put that out into the labor market in the welfare department, and he got one native to actually call him who was looking for a job for his immigrant parents. So they really do make a huge contribution to our economy.
We've got a caller on the line. Let's hear from Dave in Menominee. Dave, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead.
So this is to the young lady that supports all this immigration. Here's I used to pick milk up on farms back in the early 80s to the mid to late 80s. So I did it for about 6 years. We had absolutely no farms like this, none. They were all family farms. No one told these farmers that they had to milk 1,000 cows. This is a decision they made on their own. That'd be like me buying 5 semis and think I could drive all of them myself. Well, you can't simply do this. I understand we need dairy farms, but something happened in the late 80s and early 90s where they went from the family farm to the big businesses. So you have the big businesses to blame because the farmers couldn't do this on their own. They borrowed millions and millions of dollars to build these huge dairy farms. For what? I mean, I don't get it.
Well,
the farmers did this to themselves. They built this farm. No one made them do it.
Right. But
so now you have all these illegal people here. There's nothing wrong with immigration, but you have to do it legally. You can't just let everybody come across the border and say, here I am, where's my debit card?
As we've talked about in several shows throughout the months and years, I think one of the growth of these larger farms has to do with the price of milk and the scale that you need to operate. But Dave Gorak, immigrant labor does account for about 51% of all dairy labor in the country. And, of course, dairy is a huge industry here in rural Wisconsin. Wisconsin's dairy industry is hurting already. Wouldn't Wisconsin dairy be crippled if we lose that immigrant labor on those farms? Because I don't think we're going back to the small family farm as a norm anytime soon.
Well, I think... Okay, I'm sorry. But
to leave, you can't stay here until you get caught by ISIS. They're doing their job. Their job is to pick up illegal immigrants. So you can't blame them for doing their job. Maybe the way they're doing their job you can, but you can't. They're creating their own problem. You look at these thousands that are coming to the U.S. border right now in this big march. Southern Mexico offered them, you could stay here in those two states in southern Mexico, but what'd they say? Nope. We're not here for beef jerky. We're here for filet mignon and lobster. So here they come to the U.S. border. When is this going to end?
All right, let's move on forward because that's part of the conversation we're trying to have. Yep. David Gorak, back to you. Won't we be in trouble?
There's no question, that you need the labor. But as your caller just pointed out, it should be legal. Now, I think it was a dairy farmer who mentioned in that clip that you ran just a few minutes ago, and I thought he said something about, well, he's got to check to make sure that they're citizens. You don't have to be a citizen to work in the United States. You simply have to be here legally, and that's why we endorse, among other things, mandatory E-Verify for all employers so you can screen people who apply for the job. I mean, it's a free and easy program to use. You can E-Verify yourself in front of your own computer at home. So I just want everybody to understand that we do not oppose the use of foreign labor, but it should be legal foreign labor. Right now we've got an estimated 8 million illegal aliens in our workforce, according to the Pew Hispanic Center. 8 million, most of them in construction and manufacturing, at a time when 45 million working-age Americans cannot find work. Okay? We are not against immigration, per se.
But
if you're going to come into this country, you've got to do it legally. And we have a right to control the numbers because... an exploding population growth is bad news for everybody in terms of wages, in terms of open space, quality of life. So, again, I just want to emphasize we do not oppose the use of foreign labor on our dairy farms or whatever kind of agricultural operation you may be interested in.
Medea Sagala, even as I recall, though, there have been, if you don't have this history, that's fine. But, I mean, I know that this is not a new situation in Wisconsin where Latino workers have been working on farms and dairy farms. I think that's been happening for a couple dozen years that I'm aware of anywhere in this area. And Texas A&M's AgriLife research concluded that if milk prices would come close to doubling if immigrant labor were removed from dairy, would Americans put up with that?
Well, obviously not. So we're all benefiting from the labor, right? So for anyone, any caller, any of our guests, everyone in this country, we actually benefit from the low costs and the low labor from immigrants and undocumented immigrants. And I think it's hypocritical for us to say, well, we don't want them here and we want them to come here legally, but yet we continue to consume the products that they produce. And we continue to utilize those services and take advantage of those services. So I want to just reiterate back to the fact that dairy farmers, it's not that they're not looking for local natives to actually work and do this, is that they can't find people to do that. So if they can't find the local resources that they need, then they have to be looking elsewhere. And there isn't a way for dairy farmers to actually apply for a worker's visa for them. So there's very little ways. 90% of the undocumented immigrants that come to this country do not have an actual legal way to come to this country to perform the services and the gaps that we have in the lower skilled jobs that we have. So there was a report by the President's Council of Economic Advisors, and it said that actually immigrant labor does actually fuel the national economic growth. It actually complements native-born citizens, and because they bring different skill levels. And so it's filling that gap, and it actually has a very, very small impact on low-skilled natives. And the only way that they would be able to come here would be through what's called an H-2B visa. And that is actually in a category where it's with, like, high-skilled labor, people with education, people with, like, unique talents to come to this country. But you have to actually first, and H-2A visas as well, those are for seasonal workers. But you have to first, like, exhaust the resources that you have locally. So there has to be nobody locally that can actually be able to perform that work. And you have to actually prove that. So you have to prove that there's not sufficient U.S. workers that are able, willing, qualified, or available, and that it can't affect the wages and conditions of U.S. workers in that similar work. So you have to...
Dean, I'd like to... I've got a question. Your guest made a reference to the H-2A visa. Is that correct?
Yes, the H-2A and the H-2B visa.
Okay, the H-2A visa is designed specifically for the agricultural industry. It allows growers to bring in an unlimited number of field workers. Unlimited number. And this has been used by people in North Carolina, citrus growers on the East Coast, raisin growers up in the Northwest. H-2A visa is designed solely for agricultural workers, and they are not highly educated, they are not highly skilled, but they do have better working conditions, and they do have higher wages than those who work under the table.
Right. And so as I was about to finish saying there is that you have to come from a list of approved countries. And this year there is an unlimited number, but it's the way that they come to that number is a very complicated way. It says that it's unlimited, but truly, like, this year they've only issued at 240,000. So it's not like they're allowing, like, millions of people to come in. It is for only seasonal workers and agricultural. And then the only other way would be the H-2B visas. Those are for non-agricultural, right? And so
that's right. There's more than 33 different guest worker programs out there. So when you say that it's difficult for people to come into this country legally to work, I think you need to do your homework.
Well,
33.
Dave, first of all, I thought we were going to have a civil conversation, and I'm not here to insult you or insult anyone. But I do have a very good understanding of the immigration process. And to tell you that where the H-2B and the H-2A visas are found, that's where you have, like, very highly skilled, educated people with bachelor's degree, with master's degree. So when I'm telling you that 90%, give me a second to finish, please. When I'm saying that 90% of the people who actually come to this country who are undocumented immigrants, they are low skilled. So while we may have a lot of visas that are available for people, the actual amount that they can apply to is so limited to the number of immigrants that are coming. And it takes a long time to actually get approved. Your employer has to pay for this. So you have to find an employer who's willing to do that. And people are dying. They're dying in their countries because of the things that this country has done in Latin America and Central America, that you can't ask people or expect people to sit there and just watch their families dissipate and do nothing about that. We have to have some sort of compassion towards other humans, too.
Let's move to a call. We've got Dave in Eau Claire. Dave, thank you for joining us. Go ahead.
I know that the one of the people whose name is Dave and whose name I can't remember wants to stick with the rule of law. But it's important to remember that crossing the border illegally or overstaying your visa is a federal misdemeanor. It's not a felony. It's on a par with trespassing on in a federal forest, or cutting down a Christmas tree unlawfully in a federal forest, or using Smokey Bear's likeness unlawfully. When we start treating these kinds of immigration misdemeanors like that, rather than shipping people to detention centers and deporting them, rather than treating them cruelly and unfairly, then we'll be following the rule of law. But the way we do it now is not following the rule of law.
Thank you, Dave. Appreciate the comment. We'll be back with Medea Sagala of El Centro de Conexión de Chippewa Valley and Dave Gorak of the Midwest Coalition to Reduce Immigration. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Our conversation on the effect of immigration enforcement and policy on Western Wisconsin continues with WPR's Dean Kallenbach in just a minute. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. The nation's immigration debate was front and center during this year's midterm elections, and not just in Congress or the states along the Mexican border. The issue is on the minds of voters coast to coast, including in Wisconsin, and surface regularly with the state's congressional candidates. And with the new Congress taking shape, it's an issue that will without doubt continue to be in the headlines, just as it was earlier this fall when a four-day raid by officers with Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, removed illegal immigrants from 14 counties in Wisconsin, including several in the western region. Perspectives on the immigration debate in western Wisconsin are being shared in this week's edition of Newsmakers, a conversation recorded in our studios in Eau Claire earlier this week.
I'm Dean Kallenbach. We're talking immigration today with Medea Sagala of El Centro de Conexión de Chippewa Valley and Dave Gorak of the Midwest Coalition to Reduce Immigration. Medea Sagala, earlier this month, a federal appeals court upheld a ruling blocking the Trump administration from ending DACA, the Deferred Action of Childhood Arrivals, a program set up by President Obama. President Trump plans to take that fight to the Supreme Court. Are the Dreamers, those undocumented individuals who came to the U.S. as children, a significant population among Latinos in our part of Wisconsin?
Yeah, so actually in Wisconsin, we have 7,600 DACA recipients. Nationwide, it's 800,000. In order to be a DACA recipient, you actually have to have a clean record. You have to be employed. You have to either have a high school diploma or a GED. And the benefit of the DACA program is that it really encourages students to be model residents. And so we have a gain by their contribution to the economy through their labor and their wages. You know, within Wisconsin, we would have an economic loss of $426 million. And nationwide, that would be $460 billion, just because of their impact that they have to this community.
The recent election shifts the House of Representatives from Republican to Democrat, a party which favors the retention of DACA. in order to get significant immigration reform passed, the President and the Senate will have to compromise. What do you hope to see from Congress in the next 2 years?
Well, it's really important that people take into consideration that, especially when it comes to Dreamers, because that's really what we would like, is a Dream Act, because DACA doesn't actually give you a way to residency. So when we're talking about people should stand in line to get their citizenship, we have to really understand the immigration process. You actually have to become a resident first, and you have to be a resident for 3 to 5 years, become a permanent resident at that point, and then you have to actually apply for citizenship, which is not guaranteed. So we really want a program to be able to give them that access, and especially because as children, you should not be paying for, you know, anything that your parents have done or decisions that your parents have made. Then most of them have actually lived here most of their life. We even have people who are in the military who have served and defended this country who are DACA that don't have a way to continue to support their country in the manner that they feel that they should. And we really need to be finding ways to be able to accommodate, especially those who are willing to risk their lives.
Dave Gorak, President Trump used the caravan, the migration of hundreds of individuals from Central America through Mexico to the U.S. border, to emphasize immigration as a big issue in the midterm elections. But the Republicans did lose the House. Is this a bellwether that Americans want new policies that can lead to a path to citizenship for those who are currently in the country without documentation?
Well, there are a number of studies in the last year or 18 months showing that the American people want our laws enforced, and they want less legal immigration. Now, you know, I don't think anything is going to happen during the next 2 years. Lame duck sessions are just, historically, nothing is really going to happen. But I just want to touch briefly on this whole DACA situation, which, by the way, was a lawless action on the part of President Obama. It's true that these children, these dreamers who came here as small children, had no say in being brought here. But our response to this is, how much of a say did the American people have when their parents decided to enter this country illegally? How much of a say did the American people have when their federal government made the decision not to enforce our immigration laws? These caravans that you're seeing coming now, okay, they're coming because the United States of America, the federal government, has been sending a message to the rest of the world that we are not serious about enforcing our immigration laws, that we no longer care about our sovereignty or right to self-determination. That's why all of this is happening.
I want to correct something that Dave said. Actually, the Court of Appeals, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, said that it was not illegal or overreached by the president. So that narrative that actually is that this was illegal is not true, and that there is actually bipartisan support for DACA.
And, of course,
bipartisan support has nothing to do with the fact no laws were passed to create DACA. Okay, this was an executive action, not an executive order, an executive action on the part of President Obama. And a federal judge down in Texas has ruled that in all likelihood, if it goes to the Supreme Court, DACA is going to be found to be illegal.
Well,
that's where it stands right now. That's where it stands right now. It's going to go to the Supreme Court at some point.
And we aren't going to be able to guess the result of that, but we, as we established earlier, it looks like it's heading to the Supreme Court for action or a decision not to act, depending on how they play that. We want to continue the conversation about DACA. We've got Nancy from River Falls on the line. Nancy, go ahead.
Thank you. Hi. Thank you for supporting DACA, for supporting people who are immigrants because of abuses in their own nations to come to America and to work here and to support people here. I have a nephew-in-law, so I have a great nephew whose parents came as DACA, who supported this country, who have been professionals supporting this country. They are in my family. And as a child, I saw migrant workers in southeastern Wisconsin living in camps to do our farming work, which my friends and relatives also would do. We were hardworking people. I support hardworking people around the world, and I support that America still stands with open arms and a handout to lift up those who want freedom from oppression. Thank you.
Nancy, thanks for your comments. Let's move next to Joyce from Eau Claire. Joyce, go ahead.
Hi. I would like to echo what the most recent caller said. I'm really grateful for my Latino neighbors. And just for the record, I married a Norwegian who is also half German. So his parents and ancestors came here for the exact same reason, for their children. The difference is that the Congress made laws that allowed that, and Congress has shirked its duty. Now, as far as DACA goes, if anyone ever has had a chance to have a conversation with one of these young people, I can tell you right now, I'm 67 years old, and as I age, if these young people who have learned how to take care of people in their family, who treat each other so respectfully and kindly, those are the people I'm going to want around me, taking care of me as I age. So I wholeheartedly welcome our immigrant neighbors. And yes, there should be restrictions on people who are harmful, but Congress needs to do its job and make immigration make sense. Thank you.
Thank you, Joyce. And I'm Dean Kallenbeck. Our guests are Medea Sagala from El Centro de Conexión de Chippewa Valley and Dave Gorak of the Midwest Coalition to Reduce Immigration. Immigration, our topic. Dave Gorak, regarding another move that the federal government is involved with, the Justice Department is asking census officials to add a question about citizenship. In this atmosphere, won't that have a chilling effect on participation in the headcount?
Well, you know, why should anybody be fearful of declaring citizenship before they vote? I mean, you don't want non-citizens voting. I mean, who wants that? I just don't understand. I mean, the right to vote was bought and paid for with more than 1 million American lives that were sacrificed in defense of this country since the founding of it. So I just don't understand, you know, if you're here legally, for example, you should have no problem with that. I mean, you're a legal permanent resident. You can respond to the census. But, yeah, I mean, I think the right to vote it should be reserved solely for people who are citizens. And anybody who says that, well, anybody can just walk in and vote, that's absurd.
Medea Sagala, the census is used to calculate, among other things, our representation in Congress. Don't we need to know who our citizens are in order for that to be equitable?
Yeah, I mean, I could understand. I don't have a problem with people reporting that they're citizens. I think that the problem being is that when you target a certain community or you target certain minority groups, it makes it very difficult for them to trust the government. And so that's probably where the hesitation is coming in and saying, why do I need to tell the government whether I'm a resident or a citizen? Like, they should already have that information and they should already know that. They shouldn't need to be asking me that, seeing how if we're here legally and that's who they're asking of their residents, and they wouldn't need to duplicate that work.
Now, getting a driver's license in Wisconsin is tougher than it used to be for undocumented aliens, since it's now also used for voter ID. An article in the Wisconsin State Journal showed 32,000 immigrants need a license but don't have one. What's that meant for the immigrant population in our community?
Well, unfortunately, what that does is that creates another sense of fear, right? So then people who need to be getting to and from work or emergency if they're driving. We had a local family who had a sick child with cancer who, you know, she needed her treatments in emergency. And how is she, you know, we had that conversation with the police department as to, like, what was that family supposed to do when she needs treatment? It was a child who didn't ask to be sick, parents who are needing to get this child treated. And so people are actually, like, becoming more recluse. And it would really benefit this country, the country, but our state in the fact that if we actually had driver's license, and it's actually very well supported by the police department, it would generate like $1.9 million just in permits and fees and driver's license. You'd have safer drivers. They would contribute to insurance premiums. And it would actually lower the premiums for the citizens, too. And then we would actually know who those people are. So you would know who, like, the, you know, real criminals are compared to, like, people who are just here to try and make a living.
Dave Gorak, does that make sense to you?
Well, there are no studies out there that support the fact that giving driver's licenses to illegal aliens makes our roads safer. And the
the catch here is that when you buy automobile insurance, you have to renew it every 6 months. Now, automobile insurance is expensive, and much of the money that illegal aliens earn here, and it's not a lot, go back to their home countries. And so they've got what they've got left is barely enough to live on from one paycheck to another. So the other thing is, if an illegal alien says, okay, I'll go out and I'll buy the automobile insurance, and then 6 months later it expires, and he decides not to renew it, what happens then? Is the state going to take away his license?
Well, I don't think you lose your license for not having insurance. You're just required to have it to drive, so I don't think that would be taken away. Let me go.
Can I just correct something? The information that I provided, that actually does come from studies. Those are studies done on the 13 states that actually currently do allow driver's license. So I can provide that to Dave later. I also wanted to say, the fact that he's indicating that we have low wages, I'll tell you how low wages we have. From 1997 to 2007, there was a $20 billion increase in the wages. So if we're indicating that those are low wages, I think $30 billion is not a low amount of wages.
That's nationally?
Nationally. So then 70% of undocumented immigrants are actually on payroll. And the Social Security Administration office indicated that they have this earnings, a suspense file. It's $520 billion. And three quarters of that is from undocumented immigrants. And there's a growth of $50 billion per year. $6 to $7 billion of that goes to Social Security, and $1.5 goes to Medicaid. So for us to say that, or for Dave to say that they have very low earnings, that's without being disrespectful, that's almost laughable, because I don't think, you know, half a trillion dollars is a small amount of wages.
Okay. Maria, let me ask you this. You know, this conversation always ends up focusing on money. And what I want to, get from you is, why is money so much more important than American sovereignty?
I did not say that. I was just adding to the information that you provided.
Yeah, but the issue is American sovereignty and our right to defend our borders and to protect American jobs. But it always boils down to how much money is being contributed. That's not the real issue. The real issue is, what kind of immigration policy should this nation have so that all people benefit from it? And right now, that's not the case.
In our immigration policy, it actually indicates that it is, Dave is correct, it does indicate that we are to protect the U.S. citizens as well, but it also indicates that we're supposed to take into effect, like, the immigrant population. And I'm not focusing just on the dollar amounts, but when you're sitting there saying that they don't contribute, that's not true. They actually do contribute, and they contribute a huge amount. And as a matter of fact, like, they don't what they generate in their public revenue actually exceeds, like, their public costs. So it's not like they're a burden to this society. And yes, we should have a legal way for them to be here. But after the role of the U.S. government in their countries with the coups and backing up coups and the genocides that occurred in there, and providing them military and high grade military supplies so that the U.S. could have who they wanted as presidents in those certain countries, not who they democratically elected, and then allowing them to commit war crimes, we owe them something. We owe them something to provide them. That's the only reason that they were coming here. Before the 80s and the 90s, you didn't hear about the Central Americans coming to the United States. And that's the reason why, because this country went and destroyed their countries and their economy, making them dependent on us. And so, therefore, that's why you're having them come to this country.
As we come to our close, there is a couple of times David Gorek made the comments, and we haven't gotten to it yet. But according to the Pew Research Center, the population in the United States will grow to 438 million by 2050. Most will be from immigrants and their descendants. Mireya Segala, how do you provide housing, good jobs, education, and more for an increase of more than 120 people?
Well, the thing is that they are
20 million people.
Yeah,
sorry.
So they are providing for themselves. As I indicated, they have a net income, and they're providing for themselves. They're generating jobs. They're the highest growth in starting businesses. They generate $776 billion, and so what they're actually providing for themselves is actually going to be a growth to actually support their influx.
Medea Segala of El Centro de Conexión de Chippewa Valley and Dave Gorek of the Midwest Coalition to Reduce Immigration, thank you for joining us for this conversation today. We appreciate having you here.
Today's discussion on immigration issues and perspectives from Western Wisconsin was moderated by WPR's Dean Kallenbach. It was recorded earlier this week in Eau Claire for WPR's weekly current affairs program, The West Side. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer of Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers.